Blog Talk Radio.
Afternoon, Red Bulls fans. This is a special edition of the 40 Scenes Fire American Soccer Show, of course, as you know, covering the New York Red Bulls as a part of the beat that I produce and provide for everyone. And today, of course, we discuss about the strange and unpredictable things that happened between Mike Petke and the New York Red Bulls. Of course, Mike Petke, late evening Tuesday, early morning Wednesday, was relieved of his duties unceremoniously by brand-new sporting director Ali Curtis, and he has been replaced by Jesse Marsh. Joining me at the moment is Michael Lewis of BigAppleSoccer.com, as well as Newsday, and hopefully soon we'll have on Christian Dyer, who broke the story on Metro New York newspaper. Michael, 2 years of Mike Petke as a head coach. We know he's been a former player with this team back in the late 90s, you would say, of course, coming back to the Red Bulls in 2009, of course, his last year as a player in 2010 with the first year of Red Bull Arena. This has been probably one of the most strangest moves, and I would have to say one of the most head-scratching moves I've ever seen from a club, even though the history has not been great, the last 2 years have.
Yeah, it's funny. A fan asked me via Twitter today, or maybe it was on Facebook. I've been on social messaging so much in the last couple of days, they all kind of blend together. He said, "What exactly happened?" And I thought for a minute, and then I responded to him saying, "Well, Petke was there." And what I meant was, no matter who the coach was, unless that former coach or that coach in position embraced Ali Curtis's philosophy of soccer analytics and money ball of soccer and whatnot, I think he was doomed. And I think that was the reason. Unless there's something else below the surface that we're going to find out in the next several days, weeks, or months. But I think it was just as simple as that. To get rid of such a popular coach as Mike Petke, who had two of the most successful seasons, you could say arguably the two most successful seasons back-to-back in team history, outside of going to MLS Cup, winning the Supporters' Shield 1 year, coming back and within a goal of reaching the MLS Championship game. To quote Mr. Spock from Star Trek, is illogical, simply illogical.
Absolutely. Absolutely, it is illogical. Joining us now, of course, also another member of Big Apple Soccer and of Metro New York newspaper, Christian Dyer, who broke this story late evening Tuesday, early morning Wednesday of this week. Christian, thanks for being on. When you got the news from your sources about the situation, what did you think?
Well, first off, Dan, thank you for having me on. Secondly, if we could just mute Michael Lewis, I've heard enough of his voice the past 24 hours. I would appreciate that right now. And so would the ulcer in my stomach.
No, but go ahead, Christian. I mean, this has been gut-wrenching. As soon as your article came out, like on all the social network areas, Twitter, Facebook, I wouldn't say an explosion. I would call it a lava flow of eruption that happened with this whole Mike Petke situation.
Yeah, it certainly is, and I think there's a lot of angst from the fan base, and rightly so, and in many ways, I think you can say the day that the Metro died. A lot of fans have been skeptical of this ownership. They've seen it as a bit of a marketing gimmick, whether right or wrong, that is the perception of things. And then you look and see a head coach who was wildly popular, a former player dating back to the Metro Stars days in 1998, now kind of getting a second life with the Red Bulls as a head coach, as a player, and then as an assistant coach, and then a head coach. And then inexplicably, he's fired. There doesn't seem to be any real cause other than the fact that, well, he wasn't Jesse Marsh and he doesn't seem as keen on analytics and soccer data as Jesse Marsh, perhaps. So in many ways, I think the fan base, and in particular a strong segment of the what I will say is the hardcore fan base, Dan, is aghast at this because they see this as a shot at their history in many ways, whether it's right or wrong. That's how it's being perceived. And also as kind of the last link to this team, the way that Red Bull came in and kind of washed over things and rebranded so quickly, now you've got the same thing with the firing of Mike Petke. Someone we all assumed would be starting his third year as head coach is now out a handful of weeks before the start of the season.
Isn't it weird and strange at the same time, Michael, that because we're already into 2015, that this type of move has been made? I mean, with all this sort of soccer analytics stuff, now, I'm not a proponent of it, which means I have no clue what it is, and I'm not going to start acting like a Harvard professor of soccer to say, well, this is what soccer analytics is. I'll admit I have no clue, but why not just have Mike just stay here for the season? Maybe the sporting director, Ali Curtis, can at least, you know, maybe help him learn what this whole thing is all about. Maybe Mike would have understood what the situation is. I just don't understand it.
Daniel, if I told you once, I told you twice or 1,000 times, do not speak logically. Now, seriously, it does make sense. And listen, I'm not into it myself. And who knows, maybe this is the new wave of the future. Maybe this will turn things around. I don't know that. I'm not into that myself. I kind of remember something way back, maybe 20 years ago, 25 years ago, at a Long Island Junior Soccer League convention. Professor Julio Mazze, Pelé's confidant and former coach of the New York Cosmos, was talking to a bunch of youth soccer coaches. And he was talking about kids playing video games. This is before the internet as we know it. And also being on the computer so much. And basically he said, you know something, the greatest computer that they have is right here. And he pointed to his brain. And what I'm getting at is, yeah, it's great to have all that analytical stuff, but it comes down to players' decisions on the field. And again, I'm not an expert at this soccer analytics stuff, but to me, you put out a game plan, you tell the players what to do as a team, what to do individually, and hopefully they follow it. To me, that's what soccer is all about, making decisions on the field, on the go, literally thinking on your feet. Now, again, I don't know about the soccer analytics, and again, it could be the next best thing since sliced bread, but you would think, going back to your question, you would think that why not stick with someone like Mike Petke? I think Petke might be flexible enough to learn, or at least willing to learn. And I don't know what went down in the conversations between the two men behind closed doors, but perhaps Mike said, no way, I'm not going to use it. Who knows? But, getting rid of a popular coach like this, as Christian said, you know, with all the history, is tantamount to the team or club suicide.
It sounds like it, Michael and Christian. We've seen Petke before we were even in this wonderful media as soccer writers and, of course, in other forms of writing or discussing it. We've seen him as a player, of course, defending on that back line. The 2000 season, I think, with Octavio Zambrano as the head coach of the Metro Stars at the time. Of course, we can't forget what happened I just forgot his name. It's not Grafer. Who is the keeper who got stomped on by
Mike Aumann.
Mamadou Diop? Yes, Mike Aumann. We remember that fateful game against Colorado over at the Giant Stadium where he lifted up his jersey after he scored a goal and said, revenge is coming. You know, that is one of those things that endears the fans of respecting Mike Petke because he truly believed in what he did. Even though he got fined for it, And maybe that's the start of the whole FIFA no more celebrating messages if you score a goal because you'll get booked for it. But, you know, Mike Petke, he really put his heart on his sleeve both as a player and as a head coach.
Was that a question?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I would agree, definitely. Mike Petke is someone who undoubtedly didn't have very much of a filter and made his wallet a little bit lighter at times sometimes after press conferences. But that's the reason why fans love him. Fans lived vicariously through him on the plastic pitch at Giants Stadium, and they lived vicariously through him with his antics on the sidelines. And I think one of the things that has made Mike great is his ability to transform himself. He took himself from a fiery player to a fiery coach, and then over this past year, we've seen a little bit of a transformation, some maturing, a development, as he's kind of became a little bit more calm. He learned to steady the ship a little bit, and I think his style worked last year for what they needed to do. They needed a switch from Hans Bacca, who was a little bit aloof, a little bit standoffish, wasn't very involved on a day-to-day basis in terms of the details. And Mike came in and became that passionate guy, that fiery head coach that the team needed at the time. But then this year, I think realizing perhaps that approach was great for the regular season, but led the team to crash come the playoffs. They were just completely spent for that, two-leg series that they played. He transformed himself, and there's a little bit of a metamorphosis here, and he became calmed, he became more composed, more controlled, and to his credit, I think that led to the playoff run this year, where you saw the win over Sporting Kansas City, winning in two legs against DC United, a team that had won the Eastern Conference, and then doing what they were able to do in New England, a team that I think was obviously very underrated for much of the regular season. But then they put in a good fight there as well against New England, despite the busy fixture schedules and everything else they had going for them or against them during the playoffs. So to his credit, Mike Petke is just more than revenge is coming. He's more than the 22, 23-year-old kid with the breathe right strips and the dyed blonde hair. And he's more than the guy who just came back and played his final couple of years in New York. I think he developed into a very good head coach. I know I spoke with a league general manager a few weeks ago who told me that he had his eye on Mike as someone who he thought could develop into being one of the better coaches in MLS. And I don't think he'll be out of work for too long.
Don't think so either there, Christian. Michael, obviously, when I spoke to you at the end of the regular season of 2013, when the Red Bulls won their first ever title, a regular season championship in the Supporters' Shield, I said to you that I thought Mike was going to have a decent season. I didn't think it was going to lead to that. I thought it was going to lead into a playoff position, but one and done as well. But he surprised me. Did he surprise you?
Yes, pleasantly surprised. I think he's a smart guy. He learns. Like I said, I think he's flexible. And even though he entered the league not being the last word in tactic, I think slowly but surely he was picking it up at a higher level. And I think his greatest, what impressed me more than anything else, was man management when it push came to shove. You're not always going to have everyone loving you, okay? There's no way that's gonna happen. There are going to be players that are going to be grumbling and maybe even PO'd at you. But, the way he protected the players in these post-game press conferences, he refused to criticize them publicly, even if they made blunders beyond mistakes. That was the big thing. And I think he was progressing into a very, very good coach. I think we're going to find out how good he is. I agree with Christian. Damn, I agree with him again. I agree with Christian that he's going to find employment elsewhere. It's just a matter of time. And I think it's going to be quicker than we think.
Let's see if Michael. Let's see if Michael agrees on this. Mike, I want a raise.
No,
just
I have no
joking,
comment.
Just
I have,
joking.
I have no comment.
Well, this is the 46 Fire American Soccer Show special Red Bull report. Mike Petke, of course, fired five of New York Red Bulls. Ali Curtis has taken over as sporting director, who did the firing, brings over Jesse Marsh. If anyone listening to the show, you can either post your question on the chat room, or if you want to call in, the phone number is 646-929-1823. If you want to post your questions, chat room is open. Just scroll down on your screens and just type in your questions, please. You know, Christian, wasn't it amazing? At the same time, a little fearful in 2013 after that loss on the road to Chivas USA, that those reports, and I believe you were there as well during training when Mike Petke and Thierry Henry were basically head to head on the verbal of words, and many thought that Petke would be Henry's puppet when he took the job. How amazed were you that Thierry Henry actually listened to Mike and accepted his philosophy?
Well, I think to say it was a war of words is probably to cut about a tenth of what actually happened. And I was the only reporter there that day. And I wish that there had been someone else because I couldn't quite believe what was happening. But, you know, to see a head coach that cared that much, that was willing to get in the face of one of the greatest players of all time and certainly the best player I think to have ever played in MLS in Thierry Henry, it showed who Mike Petke was. And then the flip side of that, which I think is the part we oftentimes miss, we oftentimes get so hung up on the fact that Thierry Henry, that Mike Petke was willing to stand up to Thierry Henry. He wasn't going to be intimidated. He wasn't going to back down. Well, all of that's true. But what Mike Petke also was able to do was then go in and be a man and be able to talk about these things and settle down and talk with the player and not let it impact the role that Henry had or the status that he had with the team. I mean, you know, Mike Petke is a very strong-willed individual, but at the same time, so is Thierry Henry. And he could have very easily lost Henry if he had drawn too firm of a line in the sand and had made too much about it. But he was able to sit down and talk about it and be able to use his clout as a former player, as a guy who'd been capped a couple times by the U.S. national team. He's seen a lot. He's done a lot. And he was able to communicate that. So, you know, as much as people want to praise Petke for standing up to Henry in that situation and doing that, he should be praised just as much, if not more so, for the way that he handled it afterwards, for being able to negotiate it, and then being able to maximize and get the best out of Henry. And from that moment, the whole team, I think, really kind of categorically came together, stepped up, and that was the incident, and that was the moment that led to the supporter shield run.
Absolutely. Michael, obviously you were probably sleeping when this whole thing went down, and, of course, Christian reporting it. No, listen, look, I'm not trying to patronize the master. I just want to make, you know, look, you know, not, you can't be on 24-7 all the time. I mean, that's me too. I can't be on 24-7 all the time either. Christian, you're just special, that's all. But no, but when you heard the news from Facebook and Twitter, Michael, that this whole thing just, I like I said already, a lava meltdown. It was this lava flowing through the city. I mean, this is just one of those things where you just couldn't believe what you were reading.
Well, you know, it's funny. I think I have two faces, one as a human being and the other as an editor. And I think more the editor or journalist part clicked in, and I went and did my due diligence putting up a Christian story for on Big Apple. That was the more than anything else. I didn't have time to ask him, are your sources correct? I trust Christian. He's been clubbing home runs, using the parlance of another sport for, in this case, for us all season. So I went with it, and I think afterwards I was maybe more taken aback, thinking like, holy you-know-what. And even when I was doing it, you know, to me it was getting the story up more than anything else, doing a professional job, and then just saying, what the heck just happened?
Yeah. Absolutely. We have a question here in the chat room. It's from Mr. Dick Sachs, all the way from the United Kingdom. You get a lot of Red Bull fans, not just from within the New York area and around the United States, but also over in Europe. Christian, I'll let you answer this one first. He says, irrespective of the incident itself, what can the Red Bulls do to get the fan base behind Ali Curtis and Jesse Marsh?
Well, I think perhaps the only thing that could be done would be a move like the one that we've seen rumored and now we know isn't going to happen, and that's a move for the like of a Jozy Altidore. I mean, being able to go out there and get someone with some past, with some history with this club, something along those lines might resonate with people in this fan base. I mean, I think fans feel betrayed, not just because they love Pecky. If Mike Pecky went out his third year and started off the first 10 games of the season without a win, I'm not sure there would be any fans who would be terribly disappointed in anyone in the Red Bulls organization if he were to be fired at that point. But the timing of how this came along, especially after what I think you could probably argue were two of the most successful three or four seasons in franchise history, perhaps just 2000 and the 1998 team, with that MLS Cup run that they made, would only rival the past two seasons under Mike Pecky. There have never been back-to-back seasons for this franchise like the one that Pecky has overseen. So with all that being said, I think it would have to be a tip of the hat to some move like that would show an investment for the club locally, bringing back a club icon, Jozy Altidore. I think something like that would work. I don't know if it has to be a big name, but it has to be a name with resonance. Altidore would do that. Sasha Kljestan doesn't do that. He doesn't have a prior connection to the club. But for a fan base right now that feels like, you know, the last vestiges of the Metro Stars name are being removed with this firing of Mike Pecky. I know Jozy Altidore wasn't a Metro Star, but maybe making a move for someone like a Jozy Altidore is the right way to go. Quite frankly, if the asking price is $5 or $6 million a season for Altidore, that's very steep. But that might be the only way to get the sting of this move off. And quite frankly, Red Bull striking out on Altidore right now only makes things worse. They need to overspend to make this happen.
Michael, the history of the coaches that have come here, I mean, my goodness, Carlos Alberto Pereira, the famed Brazilian national team coach. We've had Octavio Zambrano coming over from the LA Galaxy for 3 years and had that one solid stint getting into the Eastern Conference Final. Bob Bradley, who had great success with the Chicago Fire, got this club into the Open Cup Final in 2003, unfortunately losing to that club he once coached in this final. Bruce Arena has been a coach for maybe a season and a half before he was let go. I mean, the countless names, Michael, that has coached this club, either as the Metro Stars or the New York Red Bulls, has been mind-blowing. And Mike Pecky went over a season, but he never went three.
Are you saying go and coach the Red Bulls, get fired, and you'll move on to something else and greater success? Gee, that's an interesting formula there. Unfortunately, that's the way things have gone down with this team. Obviously, Carlos Alberto Pereira had won a World Cup when he took over in 1997, but it's amazing what has gone through this organization, and it's just mind-boggling who they've let go. I still say a seminal moment in Red Bull's history was letting Bruce Arena go in 2007. Granted, things weren't perfect under him, but he is the best coach in the United States. And if management could not see that, I know he's a difficult person to deal with. I've had my moments with him, and saying that I'm on pretty friendly terms with him these days, maybe it's because I'm 3,000 miles away. But seriously, sometimes you've got to put up with, talent like that. And unfortunately, that was cut short in 2007. And they just haven't found their way. And we all know what's happened in L.A. Bruce has won 3 out of 4 last MLS Cups. You can't do too much better than that unless you, you know, ran the table 4 times in a row. But, yeah, this is what, their 15th coach now? It's mm-hmm. amazing. And, you know, I wish Jesse Marsh all the luck in the world. He's sort of, I won't say innocent, but he's the poor guy that's got to take over for Mike Pecky. And as I wrote in a column earlier today, he and Ali Curtis are going to be under a lot of scrutiny, and rightfully so. You know, every move is going to be magnified and put under the microscope by the fans, the media, and soccer observers because of what happened here. And nothing less but a winning season, getting into the playoffs. And even right now, I think you've got to reach MLS Cup to consider this a successful season. I don't want to hear about, oh, we're rebuilding or we're trying, you know, or whatever. You can't do that. You've got to continue what your predecessor has done. You know, if it ain't broke, why fix it type of thing. And, you know, Jesse's in the hot seat right off. I think he's man enough to handle it. Whether or not he could put together a team with Ali Curtis that will be more than competitive, it remains to be seen. And, of course, they have that new team across the river, NYCFC, who have had enough of their problems and controversy recently. We don't have to go into that. That's another program. But they all of a sudden, they're not in this, you know, the only soccer team in the spotlight in the metropolitan area. And of course, you've got the Cosmos on Long Island too, so which they don't maybe get as much coverage as the other two MLS teams, but it's not going to be easy getting publicity, let's say, in the traditional media. Internet, yeah, that's a slam dunk, no problem. But on TV, radio, and the sparse newspaper space and coverage that you have here, that's a lot more difficult. So good luck.
Yeah. Exactly. Good luck. Christian, apparently some interesting news has popped up. A woman with her sources, her name is Kelly Davitt. She's on Twitter. Apparently the academy coaches, when they found out the same time that Mike was fired, apparently they resigned. Apparently some of these academy coaches have left the Red Bull Academy system because of what happened to Mike Pecky. Now, I don't know if this is if it's true or not, but it has to be thrown out there. I mean, is that amazing to see that these people have given up because Mike was fired the way he was?
I don't want to go into specifics, especially not knowing the situation. If Mike, if the reason why they left is because of Mike. You know, certainly a situation like that, if someone steps up and says, we're willing to leave our job, it's quite a testament because that's a livelihood, that's income. I'm not sure if that's a decision that a lot of people would be comfortable making. Something along those lines is certainly a tremendous testament to Mike Pecky. And I think you look and you see some of the comments that are being made. Look no further than Mike McGee, who made a comment about what a tremendous coach is. Mike Pecky is on Twitter, and the outpouring of the fan support as well, and the players saying things and trying to stay positive and look at this. I mean, a lot of these guys loved playing for Mike Pecky. They loved his enthusiasm. They respected what he's done for the game. They knew that he was around at the time of the league, and when he entered, the MLS was in its third year. There wasn't a single soccer-specific stadium to be found within the entirety of the country. Players were getting paid, but you know, some of them were getting paid $16,000 a year. And I look at Billy Walsh, who was, you know, a few years into the development of the league, and he was coaching a Division III program part time to help make ends meet. So Mike Pecky's been there and done that. And what he remembers in 1998 about MLS, playing in front of 15,000 at Giant Stadium was considered a great Saturday night. Now 25,000 at Red Bull Arena is a common occurrence, and it's one of the best atmospheres in the league. Certainly there's going to be a lot of anger. There's going to be a lot of hurt. And I think a lot of people within the organization, as well as the fan base, are echoing that.
Absolutely. Of course, Michael, you put out an article yesterday that the Red Bulls are looking to sell this MLS club to a buyer. But, of course, today it was refuted by the general manager, Mark de Grand Prix, who is basically not the sporting director slash general manager of this club anymore, just general manager and just helping out with all the ticket sales and stuff. Is Red Bull really trying to sell this club to someone who wants it, or are they going to keep it? I mean, that sounds like that's the big question mark right now.
Well, I could only go with my sources, and my sources told me that everything is, all the cutbacks and all what they're doing, one-year contracts and probably not spending a lot at the moment, not having plans to spend a lot of money for a big-time international player or a designated player is all, in a way of trying to save as much money as they can as they prepare the team to be sold. That's what I was told. Now, I'm not going to get into an argument with Mark Van de Pre on his statement. We published it on the website because we're a news website, and I'm into giving all views and different sides and all sides of the story, but I'm just going with my sources on this. And I'd like to think my sources who have been correct in the past are correct this time. Simple as that. It might be, for what's happened now, and, who knows, that might be the best solution for the team to perhaps to get new ownership. But you have to get the right ownership, too. You just don't sell it to the first people that come by. And not only that, it's up to the league board of governors, the owners of the other 19 teams, to approve it. So it's easier said than done. And it's going to be pretty, It's a pretty penny, too. You've got to be a billionaire to own a team in MLS these days, not just a millionaire, unless you've got a lot of millionaires combining like they did with the the new LA club that's coming in a few years. But it's a tough situation for the team right now. And I'm interested in seeing what pans out over the next several weeks to months, or maybe even over the next year, and seeing what transpires.
Michael, give Christian that raise, he'll buy the team.
Be careful what you wish for, because I'm not sure if anyone wants to play for the New York Dire Bulls.
Well, I didn't think you would go there, but okay, fine. But no, seriously, let me ask you this, Christian. If there is a new owner that does come in, and let's just say we're going to throw it back out there. Let's just say that he listens to the fan base and decides to rename or bring back the Metro Stars name to this team. Do you think that will be wise?
I think it would be a very interesting move. I think the likelihood of having a team playing in Harrison by the name of Cosmos is probably a higher percentage than Metro Stars. But it would certainly be very interesting to see that develop if someone came in with the money and if Red Bull was willing to sell for whatever the price would be. I'm not so sure that they are actively shopping the team. However, I do think that if they got the right offer, they would be open to it, as I think most owners are in this case. But if someone came along, if there was a billionaire owner that came along and decided to make the investment and have this be his toy, making it the name Metro Stars would be a home run hit, I think. I think it'd be a lot of goodwill, a lot of publicity. It would certainly be better than the New York Dire Bulls. I'll give you that much. But with all that being said, I think if someone comes on board with that kind of money, I could see a situation where either it's a partnership with, or whether they take over and buy the existing Cosmos, move them to Harrison, and then have them be the primary tenant and be the opposition, if you will, to City FC.
Michael, you know what goes on in Long Island with the Cosmos and the North American Soccer League. Obviously, they say they're fine being in the NASL, but you know they want to come to MLS. Do you think the ownership group of the Cosmos, would they buy out the Red Bulls and just move everything over to Harrison?
You know, it's not that far-fetched. I mean, I had asked Seamus O'Brien, one of the bosses of the Cosmos, the president of the Cosmos, about where they were looking for possible stadiums, because if things don't work out at Belmont Park, which is Plan A, do you have Plan B, C, or D? And he said, yes, we do, it's in the five boroughs, this or that. And he said, Northern New Jersey. Well, gee, where is there a stadium that they could play at in northern New Jersey? Now, he wouldn't go beyond that. And I've written about this on Big Apple at the Raul press conference several weeks back. So, you know, I think he was sending out some clues there that, you know, and I'm just connecting some dots. I can't connect all the dots, but, boy, he's almost like you know, teasing us with some information, because there's no way that they would share the arena with the Red Bulls, and I don't think the Red Bulls would want to have another soccer team there. But it wouldn't be that far-fetched for me if they did move, because these days in soccer, I think it's all about the venue or the stadium. And, you know, Hofstra University Stadium, James M. Schuett Stadium, you know, it's a nice small Division I football program stadium. It's great for lacrosse and everything like that. But for what the Cosmos want to do, I think they need their own stadium somewhere else. And whether it's Belmont Park, somewhere else in New York City, or somewhere in northern New Jersey. So, like I said, it would not be far-fetched.
Christian, last question, obviously. Now that Ali Curtis, this is his first major move with the club, and, of course, his soccer analytics is right now leading him to make these types of situations happen, how much under pressure? I mean, like Michael already said, I know, but from your opinion, is he already under the gun, or do you think it's not going to last, or shall I say his tenure will last long, or do you think his tenure is going to last very short?
Well, one thing he has is they have a tremendous amount of cap space. They have a tremendous amount of allocation money now with deals for Alave and everything else that have filtered out over the past few weeks. He's going to have the flexibility to do some things. And as Jesse Marsh noted, I think simply and on point, and Ali Curtis did too, there's a good core in place when you look at a Dax McCarty and Eric Alexander. And who would have thought this time 6 months ago that we'd be saying Eric Alexander is now a part of this core. But Bradley Wright Phillips, Lloyd Sam, on the opposite wing, you would have Ambrose Oyongo, Chris Duvall, Roy Miller, Luis Robles. There's some holes on this team. But I think what's really interesting is that they've got a core in place, and it's not a top-heavy core. It's good, solid players, the kind of players that win you an MLS Cup. They've got that in place. And with some tinkering, and if they can do a couple things, a Sasha Kljestan move would certainly be a step in the right direction. A Josie Altidore, I think, as well, could be a very nice move. If they're able to do moves like that, this could be a team that I think it could be a playoff team. Losing Mike Pecky is going to hurt, but Andy Roxburgh and Mike did a good job of leaving the cupboard relatively well stocked. There's some flexibility. Some of the higher salary numbers, such as a Bobby Conde, a Kosuke Kimura, some of those players are going to be coming off the books. They won't be there. So there's flexibility. If they can make good, solid moves, make perhaps an under-the-radar move or two, you look at the caliber of a player like a Roy Miller, who's available in CONCACAF, you know, to perhaps address at the center-back position or central midfield, this team could be a good team. Now the Eastern Conference is also getting deeper and better. I know that there are two expansion teams coming in that'll help prop up the Red Bulls just a little bit, but Philadelphia is getting better. I think New England, if they spend a little this offseason, they'll be even better. DC United obviously won the conference last year, and Chicago's had a busy offseason. And I think Columbus is making some good moves retaining their core. So it may not be as much about what the Red Bulls are doing as what everyone else is doing. It's been a quiet start to the offseason. But if they're smart about things, there's no doubt in my mind that they should be a top three team in the league. I'd rather in the Eastern Conference. If they're smart about their building. If they're not, this thing could bottom out very quickly, and Allen Curtis might be back at MLS doing the job.
Absolutely. Christian, thank you so much for the time. I always appreciate it. I know you're very busy today with everything going on, Jets football-wise and soccer-wise. So I'll talk to you next time, and take care.
I appreciate it, and take care, Dan. Thanks for having me on. And, Michael, always a pleasure to hear your voice. I'm sure I'll hear it in about 5 minutes. take care, guys, and Happy New Year to everyone listening. Thank you.
Thank you. Happy New Year to you, too. And it's Christian Dyer, one half of Big Apple Soccer, as well as Metro New York newspaper. Michael, before I let you go, I guess I have two questions for you. Number one, with the debacle that is the Frank Lampard situation with New York City FC and Manchester City, and it looks like that is not going to die at any time, because whether he does come in August or he will remain in England and maybe he'll never come, and what just happened with Mike Petke, did you ever see such a tumultuous time in New York City soccer in first division action that we would be having these meltdowns?
Well, we're talking within a few days of each other on each side of the new year. Two teams, no. And it's funny because I want to write a piece for Big Apple Soccer when I get away from writing all these other newsworthy events, that this is the golden age of soccer or professional soccer in the New York area. You've got two MLS teams, the Cosmos. Soccer has never been so abundant at the minor league level. You've got it on TV. You've got it everywhere. You've got it on the internet. You've got This is fantastic. And then we just get these two, I know this is a PG-rated show, so I'll try to tone down my vocabulary a bit, or maybe tone it up, depending which way you look at it. But these two really major screw-ups by both teams. It definitely gave them a lot of publicity. I'm not convinced for the right reasons. I think, without getting too deeply into the NYCFC situation with Lampard, I really think they still owe an explanation to the fan base and the media on what happened. And with the Petke thing, that's a self-inflicted wound at the moment. And I think the only way they could overcome this, besides maybe bringing back a former player, is by winning. Because we kind of forget about things. When I say we, I'm talking about the general public, fans, media, and observers in general. We kind of forget about things when teams win. And that basically will solve a lot of problems. It might not solve all problems. So, but if you would have told me this is what's going to happen, within a few days before and after New Year's, I'd say you're crazy. Absolutely crazy, and I just hope this does not set the table up for a tumultuous season for either team. I just hope things go as smooth as possible, as they can in New York, and I laugh because they can never ever go totally smooth. But hopefully this is as worst as it gets for both of them.
Now, this might be... And this is going back to soccer analytics. My final question to you is this, because I know, like, I'm a baseball fan, you're a baseball fan, and now you're seeing all these stat geeks mixing up different stats to make one big stat, or for the relief pitchers they give them holds instead of just the save for the big reliever that gets the save. I mean, is this like a head scratch? Is this some sort of like brand new thing to enhance the sport of soccer, this analytics stuff, or is it just a big headache?
I think it's going to take a while for that to catch on. And I, you know, it's funny. I'm still a baseball fan, but when I was younger, I was a much bigger fan. I was really into stats and this and that. And as I've gotten into soccer, I got less and less into stats because to me, it's great having all these assists, but if you can't pass the ball properly, it doesn't matter what your numbers are. And it's sometimes not the quantity as much as the quality. And what I'm getting at is, there are important statistics in soccer. The ultimate is one, wins, losses, and ties. There's goals against average. There is goals and assists. I don't know if we're ready to get into these other categories at the moment, or at least the way baseball is. At least I'm not ready. Maybe the new generation is. Okay, God bless them. But I think ultimately it's what you do on the field, if you win or lose. And I think that's what makes soccer so great, because it is such a subjective game. You and I could see the same game, and we could have two totally different opinions about it and still be right to a certain extent, and still be wrong to a certain extent too, because it's not and white or cut and dry that you have all these numbers that this guy's batting 353, has 52 home runs, 130 runs batted in, blah, 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 blah. But I think that's what makes soccer such a great game for fans to debate who's the better player, Ronaldo or Messi. And I couldn't tell you how many goals either one has, but I could tell you the attributes of each player, and then and I could say Messi's better than Ronaldo, and you could say the same thing, and we get into this great, I'll say debate, I won't say argument, on who's better. And that's what makes soccer so intriguing to me, that it is more subjective than other sports, at least team sports as we know it. Sorry for the long
answer. Absolutely. No, that's okay. I mean, it's good enough to get it. Michael, thank you so much for the time. I do appreciate it. Hopefully there will be some calm before we start the MLS season on March 8th over at Kansas City in Kansas. So thank you so much for the time. I always appreciate it, and I will see you hopefully at the Red Bull press event day, media day, or at the home opener. So I'll talk to you soon.
It's great having me on. Happy New Year to everyone out there in your universe, and definitely catch you soon. Thank you.
Exactly. Thank you very much. That's Michael Lewis of Big Apple Soccer and New York Newsday talking about this situation. Thank you, everyone, for listening to this special report, the special New York Red Bulls report. Once again, Sporting Director Ali Curtis has fired Mike Petke and has hired Jesse Marsh as the brand-new head coach of the New York Red Bulls. My name is Daniel Feuerstein. Join me this Tuesday at 8 o'clock Eastern as I officially start the Feuerstein's Fire season. Two special reports down, a whole season to go. Have a good afternoon, and if you're over in England listening, have a good night. Bye-bye for now, and as always, enjoy your football. Thank you. Have a good night, everybody.